Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served the Valley for decades. Here's a quick question. Ask yourself why so many people turn to Purdy Insurance, and why have they done so for decades? Because all of these people know that they are well taken care of by the Purdy family, who, by the way, have given back to the Valley. You want to talk about being ingrained? They're ingrained in the everyday. They believe in the Valley. And so Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin Herr is not with us today. Kevin was going to go to a JV football game. They saw Kevin's son's name on the roster and, out of fear, canceled the game. I mean, anybody, his son, juggernaut. Sarah, stop laughing.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. They were nervous. They were nervous. They canceled the whole game.
What do you mean? What do you mean? He's going to play? And Kevin's coming to the game? There was a little bit of a problem with security as well. A lot of autograph seekers. You know, the same thing happens when Brad Pitt goes out to see his kid play.
Essentially.
The same.
Right.
I think essentially is a good word. Sure. let's turn to Kevin's favorite team of all teams, the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers won yesterday 17-9 over the Jacksonville Jaguars in a game that Canton is not requesting a tape of. Dave Bryan, SteelersDepot.com, joins us. Dave, great to have you with us, my friend.
Celebrating the W is better than a loss.
You got that right. It always is. And let's talk about what they did defensively to keep Jacksonville out of the end zone. And then, obviously, they scored a defensive touchdown.
Well, first of all, anytime you hold a team in the NFL, limit them and keep them out of the end zone, it's an accomplishment. However, this was a Jaguars offense, obviously, with a rookie quarterback in Blake Bortles. And they also had a pair of young receivers in Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, who probably wouldn't have seen the field much if not, for their starters, Cecil Shorts and Marquise Lee being injured and held out of the game. So, I hate to bracket it that way, but I mean, let's call it what it is. What they did is they did not give up the explosive play in this game. They gave up two of them, but that's a lot better than what it's been. During the first four games of the season, they allowed two plays of 20 yards or more. Both of those went to running backs. One was a run, one was a pass. They happened three plays apart in the third quarter there. So that's a huge start right there when you're not giving an offense chunks of yardage at a time. On top of that, they did a great job of tackling the catch. You'll hear Dick LeBeau talk about that being one of the keys to his defense. All the time. I think they allowed 70-something yards after the catch, and I think 20 of that came on that dump-off to Toby Gerhart in the third quarter that resulted in a 20-yard gain there. On top of that, they're tackling better against the run. I believe only 19 yards after first contact in that game for runners that ran the football against them. A good chunk of that was the scramble, I think, by Blake Bortles. But, I mean, regardless, they're doing a better job at hitting yards. Now, you could say, well, last several weeks they really haven't faced, stiff competition when it comes to, offenses. Buccaneers were rated in the bottom. Of course, the Jaguars offense rated near the bottom there. We'll find out, Steve, what this run, whether or not this run defense is fixed or not this coming Sunday in Cleveland. That's for sure.
No question. Let's get to the offensive side of it, Dave. What do you see there right now? It seemed like there was a lack of consistency. What contributed to that?
Well, first of all, you had inside the red zone there. They ran 11 plays inside the red zone. All 11 of them were passes. Of course, I'm not counting the kneel downs at the end of the game there.
Sure.
Why wouldn't you try to run more when you've got backs like Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount down deep there? I think Todd Haley kind of, you know, sometimes these offensive coordinators will outthink themselves sometimes, and I think that's what happened there. In between the 20s, well, two of the sacks that Roethlisberger took were in the red zone as well, too. Roethlisberger, and I've said it several times in the past, he likes his wide receivers, for the most part, to be college open, okay? He's not a kind of quarterback that's going to try to fit the ball into a small window,
right,
especially down in the red zone. He takes a lot of red zone sacks. He took two of them against the Jaguars. That one, that ended up in a turnover, that just can't happen because that's points off the board. Luckily, the defense bailed him out two plays later with the Bryce McCain interception return. Third downs, you know, that they've got to do, even though that I think they completed something like 50% in this game, they had a lot of manageable situations in this game. One was on the opening drive. You're not going to see Roethlisberger make a better pass than he did, to the right sideline there to Marcus Wheaton. It went right off of his hands. It's a lot of little things, but it's so many little things that, they've got a lot of correcting to do because I thought the offensive line run blocked well. I thought pass protection for the most part was okay. They just need to start making plays more consistently and keep these drives together longer and of course, finish them in the end zone with points.
What are they getting out of the tight end situation? Now you have a completely healthy Heath Miller. Are they getting enough out of that?
Yeah, I think so. He's had 10, set a career high last week against Tampa Bay with 10
right.
catches.
Right.
Previously, I think three or four times, he had caught eight balls in the game. He had another decent day yesterday. In the situations where they're using the two tight end sets with Matt Spaeth and Heath Miller, I think they're getting enough production there in the run game. Now, look, Matt Spaeth and Michael Palmer, the number three tight end, aren't going to strike the fear of God in the defense when it comes to separation and catching the football. But, you saw something good, too, out of fullback Will Johnson, who sometimes lines up as a tight end as well, because he came back to the football on one of those catches, almost just like a wide receiver would in that game. I think they're getting enough there. It's just, drive by drive, they've got to be more consistent. They need a better rhythm. I think when you see this team come back off of the road and play this string of games at home, I think you'll see a lot more of the no-huddle offense. And I think that'll help with the rhythm there and hopefully will lead to more points on the board. They're just not able to get into any rhythm or that no-huddle for obvious reasons on the road because of crowd noise and communication.
We've talked about various elements, but in the NFL, there are no style points. The bottom line right now, they're over the Mendoza line, and at least they put themselves in a position, Dave.
Yeah, but you still would like to see some of those style points.
Sure.
I tell you, the penalties, look, they're killing themselves still a little bit on penalties, especially on special teams. Robert Golden, their special teams captain, had two penalties yesterday against the Jaguars. I think that gives them four on the season. They were offsides on two kickoffs right in a row there. Once again, it's the little things. The Troy Polamalu trying to jump the snap, that kind of thing. The offense, look, we know what this offense is and isn't, and their ability. They have the ability to put up 30 points a game. They're just going to have to start proving it because the defense is what it is. It's not going to get much better. And look, I expect them to have some problems against the run, against Cleveland this coming Sunday. The best defense the Steelers can have moving forward is their offense putting up points on the scoreboard. That'll make a world of difference. They start playing with 10, 12, 14-point leads. That's when your turnovers, that's when your sacks are going to happen.
Cleveland had a dramatic comeback yesterday, an historic comeback yesterday when they beat Tennessee on the road in Nashville. Where are the Browns a better football team that Steeler fans need to worry?
Running the football. In fact, I think I just tweeted out not too long ago, their three primary running backs, West, Tate, and Crowell, are averaging 4.86 yards per carry on 115 carries thus far through their first four games. This is a team that can run the football. As long as Brian Hoyer doesn't make mistakes with the football, they don't turn it over in the game, I think they're going to be in a lot of games there. They showed a lot of character coming back in that game yesterday against Tennessee, and that's going to go a long way in carrying over into this week. So this is going to be a tough game for the Steelers, and it's no wonder why the Browns are the line opened up with them being favored by two at home.
And in fact, I think that Twitter handle is at Steelers Depot, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now we talked about Brian Hoyer. Where is he better now than the first time that they played him?
Oh wow! I haven't gotten back into seeing a lot of the last couple of games overall. But look, in the second half, here's another thing to expect out of them, and it's what they did in the second half against the Steelers is no huddle, a real high tempo type of offense. I think he excels at that. It's really a short, compact, passing game that they're using, and combining that with their running game, is what he does best. He's not a guy that's going to wow you. I think he's just consistent, and he doesn't put his offense in bad situations. So, with them being at home and the crowd being in their favor, instead of starting the no huddle in the second half like they did against the Steelers back in week one, hey, if something worked, it'll work before, why not do it again? So I expect them to come out against the Steelers and try to get them on their heels with that no huddle and running that outside zone.
One thing the Steelers will end up avoiding will be seeing Josh Gordon because he does not get back until week 9, I believe. What does that mean that they don't have to go against a guy like that?
It means a lot because that guy crushed them in the two games last season. He is I forget I don't have the stats in front of me, but boy, the explosive plays of 20 yards or more that he put up against the Steelers last year. In particular against Ike Taylor, that is just a tough matchup. That guy, if he keeps his nose clean and can get back on the field again, he could easily be one of the top, 5, 6, 7 wide receivers in this league because of the way he has the body control, good after the catch, everything involved with that. They've gotten some production now. I think Hawkins, their undersized receiver, believe it or not, is leading their team in receptions with 24. Miles Austin, who has escaped the hamstring injury this year, that's been the knock on him, has 16 catches. They spread the football around to all of their eligibles. And like I said, Brian Hoyer just is staying away from making a mistake. If you get this team down, like they did last time, they can't sit back and relax because we saw what happened the last time these two teams met in Pittsburgh in week one.
Dave, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for carving out some time for us.
Steve, for you, always. Always have time. You do a great job. Thanks for having me on.
That is Dave Bryant, SteelerDepot.com, breaking down tape the same way Kevin breaks down tape. Maybe not. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. NBA huge TV deal. College football no shows on students. We'll talk about those issues in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on this Monday, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Or thanks to Joe Susan, the Bucknell head football coach, and also to Dave Bryant from SteelersDepot.com. A little bit later, we're going to have in the week Jeff Hartman tomorrow talking to us from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. We're also going to have Tim Owen, Blue White Illustrated, on later in the week. Let's see. Brandon Gowton from BleedingGreenNation.com is going to join us to talk about the Eagles later in the week. We are working on getting Dan Dierdorf on the show. You're saying, wow, Dan Dierdorf, all those years, Monday Night Football, CBS. He's actually now the color analyst for Michigan football. He had retired from CBS. You know, his back couldn't take all the long trips. And the one thing he had always said, that if he could work Michigan football and work with his old college teammate Jim Brandstetter, he would do it. Well, it turned out that Frank Beckman retired after, I think Frank did. I want to say Frank did Michigan football for 33 years. I mean, Bob Buford did it for 34. So they have two play-by-play guys over a 67-year span at Michigan, Bob Buford and Frank Beckman. And Frank, by the way, is one of the great guys on the planet. I really grew to really like Frank a lot and respect him tremendously. And Frank decided to retire after last season. Well, Michigan decided to take Jim Brandstetter, their color analyst of many, many years, and move him up to the play-by-play job. And they hired Dan Dierdorf to be the color analyst. So we're going to try and get Dan on the show to talk about Michigan football later in the week. So that's what we're working on our end. And if you have any suggestion for a guest, we are always more than happy to take any suggestion. This is your show, so I want to put people on that you want to hear and talk to or hear from. And if you have any ideas, we're always, always, always more than happy to go that route. Our number, 800-795-9565, 800-795-9565. The NBA gets a $26 billion deal for 9 years with ESPN and TNT. $26 billion over 9 years. That's $2.67 billion a year, which is up from $930 million a year. They have nearly, they have gone out, and they have nearly tripled the money they get per year in their TV deals from ESPN and TNT. And ESPN will get, TNT is going to get the All-Star game, ESPN gets the lion's share of the contract, at least based on what I'm reading. They'll get the draft. They'll get the draft lottery. They get each conference final, and they get ABC will get the final. And this is for 9 years through 24-25. So the deal goes into effect in 2 years. That's why you saw, for example, LeBron James signed a two-year contract. That was the reason why, because the max number will change in 2 years. And based on this contract, the max number should go up significantly. One thing they don't know yet is what that new number will be, because the ink is still drying on the deal they signed today. But $2.67 billion a year for the NBA, $26 billion over 9 years, which is a great jump from the $8.1 billion they had before over 9 years. I mean, tripling it. Now the only major contract left out there is the Big Ten contract, which is up in 2 years. And expect those numbers to go up greatly as well.
Where Mount Pleasant, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yeah, some interesting callers. I got to give Mark credit. He puts the promo together and he doesn't put the ones on that say, you're the greatest of all time. he doesn't put any of those guys on.
He likes to stir the pot, you know?
Yeah. You're right about that. Jeez. Does stir the pot. And Oh, well. We're brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served the Valley for decades. Why don't you find out why? That's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You just heard about Kevin a few moments ago talk about the great vehicle he's driving this week. No, sir, it's part of the great Kevin Herr perks.
Yeah, I know. We're all a little, I mean, he rolls in every week with a different car. Beautiful cars. It's nothing against that.
Oh, gorgeous cars. And I think you're, the way you described it, roll in every week, is actually perfect. What are you laughing about?
It's just true.
Rolls in every week. That's our guy. All right. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. He has used this show to his advantage, don't you think?
You could say that.
I believe I just did. All right. Great to have you with us. Sarah's all happy because the Orioles are in the American League Championship Series. They will get the Kansas City Royals next.
And I have, no idea about it because it's such a toss-up to me that I don't know how we'll do. I mean, I'm always confident, but...
I will say this about Kansas City. First of all, I think Buck Showalter is an outstanding manager. I really do. I've always liked him. I just think the guy is just an excellent baseball guy, great baseball mind. Then there's Ned Yost of Kansas City. I watched that series. Is he using a 40-man roster? Because everywhere I look, it looks like he has a dozen bullpen guys and a dozen pinch runners. Every time you turn around, he needs a pinch runner. New guy runs out there like, where'd he come from? And not only that, this team's so fast that when they go out there, they hand each other a baton. It's like a relay team. I mean, I swear he has a 40-man roster. I've never seen a team run out more pinch runners. Oh, yeah, oh, we got plenty more. We're fine. Bullpen? Oh, we're good. Keep running them out there. I think it should be investigated. All right. That's the National League not set. Doug Fister for the Nationals trying to keep them alive after that 18-inning loss on Saturday. And it'll be Madison Bumgarner on the mound for the Giants, who was so brilliant against the Pirates in the one-game playoff. Meanwhile, the Cardinals will take on the Dodgers. That series tied at a game apiece. Redskins and Seahawks tonight, Monday Night Football from Landover this evening. And Kirk Cousins gets to be unleashed on the Legion of Boom. Wow. Sounds ominous. That'll be tonight in Landover. Redskins need it because here's the problem the Redskins have right now. The Eagles, while not playing great offensively yet, are 4-1. The Giants have played brilliantly in their three-game winning streak. Eli Manning has 9 touchdowns and just 1 interception in the streak. It's coincided with the Giants winning 3 in a row. They're now 3-2. The Cowboys' overtime win yesterday, 4-1. That's the Redskins' big problem right now. The three teams in front of them in a 4-team division are all playing actually very well right now. The Cowboys are playing their best defense in years. The Giants have settled down offensively now that Eli Manning has the timing down in the West Coast offense and getting Odell Beckham back. Well, back. I mean, they never really have had him. The first round pick out of LSU, and he steps in yesterday, his first game, 4 catches, 44 yards, and a touchdown. And the Eagles are getting big plays out of their defense, big plays out of their special teams. and it's allowed their offense some time to hang in and then make some plays. Macklin has really been a huge plus for them, getting him back. Huge. Nick Foles is still up and down. Shady McCoy still trying to find really a rhythm in the running game. Darren Sproles has been fabulous. And I think Buzz in Northampton called us in the opening, in the second half hour. And, you know, he was asking, he said, you know, how do you get a big lead and then give that thing up? And I said, I think part of it is you get a big lead and you're like, eh, it's all right. You got it made and you relax. That's why coaches try to talk about the intensity. Remember the conversation I had with Joe Susan. There are five or six big plays in a game. Well, you know, they all happen on the last drive. Big play could happen on play 3, play 42, play 61, play 98, play 112. All right, what about the big play on play 3 there? Wait a minute. You mentioned play 3. Happens. Look at all the big plays Arizona State made in the game the other night, but the only one anyone talks about is the one at the end. Well, the one at the end was the final big play, but it wasn't the only play that allowed Arizona State to win. Michigan lost by 2 points at Rutgers Saturday night. For the most part, Michigan played well, and I personally felt that the replay call on the Darbo catch, where they said it was incomplete, I didn't think that was the right call on replay. I thought he caught it, came down with it, made a couple steps, went out of bounds, and then when he hit the ground out of bounds, he let go of the ball. The ground caused it. But, I mean, are they saying he didn't complete the... He completed the catch already in the field of play and made 2 steps. Regardless, that doesn't mean Rutgers wouldn't have blocked the kick. Rutgers has blocked kicks in the last 3 years, including 2 against Penn State, 1 punt, and 1 field goal. So, when you look at it, you're saying, okay, big plays in the game. Michigan, the big problem for them this year is giveaway takeaway. They're minus 13 right now. They have only 2 takeaways, an interception by Willie Henry, the defensive tackle that he brought back for a touchdown. And Lewis has an interception in the secondary. They have forced 1 fumble all year. They didn't recover it. And then, of course, they have 15 turnovers on offense. Well, against Rutgers Saturday evening in Piscataway, Michigan had only 1 turnover in the game, and that was an interception. But you know what? That interception then set up a drive for a touchdown. And it's the only turnover in the entire game. Yet that turnover ended up being worth 7 points in a 2-point game. Again, you don't know where the big plays are going to occur. It could be near the end where Teray blocks his 3rd kick of the year. He leads the nation in that department. Like he did with Matt Weil. It could be that interception in the 3rd quarter that led to points. They're not just the end of the game. Now, there are big plays that happened during the game that then set up the end of the game. If you missed it, Derek Green, the fine sophomore running back out of Richmond, Virginia, who's had a good year, leads the team with 471 yards rushing so far, has a couple of 100-yard rushing games. He's averaging 5.7 yards a carry. He's out for the rest of the season for Michigan. He broke his collarbone. So he's out for the rest of the year. Now, Davion Smith, the sophomore out of Warren, Ohio, the same Warren, Ohio that produced Maurice Clarett, is going to step in as the starter. He is the second leading rusher on the team with 282 yards. But to his credit, it's averaging a team leading 6 yards a carry. And Justice Hayes will be the second string running back, and Drake Johnson, the redshirt sophomore out of Ann Arbor, is going to be the third string running back. So Derek Green out for the year for Michigan. Very talented running back. But Davion Smith is also a talented running back, and he's the guy that will step in and get the bulk of the carries in all likelihood Saturday night at 7. lots been made of Michigan and what they have and have not done so far this year about the problems. I think it, also, I want to ask, Sarah, I want to ask you something that's a completely different topic. And I know I'll talk about student attendance in a moment. Katy Perry at the, did you see Katy Perry at the end of game day Saturday? Or at least know about it?
Actually, Sarah had to step out. It's Sean, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Sean. Buddy.
How's it going? Been a while.
Going great.
It's going good.
Good.
Sarah stepped back into the newsroom, so we're in with her. We're in with you for a couple minutes.
That's fine. Katy Perry stepped in at the end of game day, and she was brought in as picker.
Saturday selections. Yep.
Right. Saturday selections. And I've had people complain about, I can't believe it. It's terrible. Why they have her do it? Who cares? Joe. I mean, I have people over the years get upset. Can you believe they picked against us? They picked. So? what does that mean? It means they picked the other team.
She had a show close by there last night, so that's probably the only reason why she was there. And she did say that her manager, I guess, is an old Miss grad.
Yeah, but it's fun.
Oh, sure.
She's throwing corn dogs at the camera. She took the elephant head off of Lee Corso. I mean, she was fun. It's a show.
All for entertainment value.
Right. All the serious football stuff that they talked about happened during the show, including the segment about Michigan, about the medical staff, about Brady Hoke, about Dave Brandon and the whole thing, which Desmond Howard weighed in on, and so forth. Okay? Now, the part where they pick is not the serious part. If it was serious, why would Kenny Chesney be doing it? If it was serious, why would Charles Barkley be brought in? They do that as an entertainment part, as a hook. She goes out there, has some fun. Everybody has a few laughs. Move on. I don't care if Corso picks Penn State against Michigan Saturday night. I don't care if Desmond Howard picks Michigan Saturday night. And I don't care if Kirk Herbstreit does. I don't care if Kirk picks Penn State. I don't care. And what has always gotten me is, like, fans really care. As if it adds points to the other team if they do. You play the game. You know, I don't care who's picked. There'll be a Monday night game tonight. Across the board, almost everybody in that Monday night board is going to pick Seattle tonight. Okay. Well, you never know. The Redskins may have a big night tonight. Student attendance, big problem at Michigan State. Lots of empty seats. We'll talk about that when we close in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKF.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Pretty Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PrettyInsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
There is nothing like Kevin in the newsroom doing the dance to this.
It's one of his favorites.
You know, the staff doesn't share that feeling. All right, so student attendance. Darren Revelle of ESPN.com has done a great job over the years of talking about student attendance. Georgia, for example, student no-shows. These are all kids that have bought tickets but aren't using them. Student no-shows at Georgia, 26%. Michigan, 28%. Arizona, which just won at Oregon, they have a 46%. No-show rate from students. Now, admittedly, there's a few things to do in Tucson. Still, that's what we're seeing across the board. At Michigan State, they're playing Nebraska. Night game. Now, I know it's raining, but it's a night game. And as you know, that when it comes to a noon game, for whatever reason, the students just can't seem to get motivated to go to a noon game. mean, the Penn State's playing Northwestern. Penn State comes in 4-0, the whole thing. That student section never filled up. It never did. I don't quite see what the attraction is to blowing off a game. I don't, you know, but I'm a sports fan and I'm into it. But I don't see what the attraction is of blowing off, even if it means going over at 12:30. I don't see what the attraction is to missing it. You bought the tickets. You know, figure out how to use them. But they have to somehow figure out a way, either by reducing prices or incentives or something, that allows, you know, that student section to get filled up. Now, at Penn State, the student tickets sold out in 28 minutes, so selling them here is no issue. At Michigan, where Penn State's playing at night, they had 6,000 student tickets not sold. And don't expect to see them in the seats when the game is kicked off. Evidently, they're doing a kickoff boycott because they're mad at the administration. It's hard for me to get in. I may take some time with my class to sit down and talk with them about this, but it's a small sample, obviously. I've got, you know, 24 young people in my class. But what are the incentives that make them go, and also what are the things that make them not go? Now, obviously, losing enters into it, but take Penn State. They were 4-0 going into Northwestern, and their people were feeling magical about how things had gone so far. At Michigan, obviously, they're 2-4. They're not happy. But at Michigan State, they're fighting to get into the Final Four. And that was a big stepping stone game to get them back into the Final Four conversation, which they won. And I know it's raining, but they had a lot of empty seats, especially in the fourth quarter. The students then left early. Nebraska rallied before Michigan State won in 27-22. But these are your consumers of tomorrow. Too much short-sighted look at tickets. We have to sell tickets. We have to get revenue in now. No, you have to look at everything within your stadium as a long-term solution. Because that student ticket that you're trying to entice young people to go with, that is your alumnus 15 and 20 years from now that's buying the seat on the 40 and 50. That's that alumnus 5 years out that may buy the more inexpensive ticket in the other end zone, but they want to be a part of what's going on. And then all of a sudden, 10, 15 years later, they're buying, trying to upgrade to a better seat in the 40 to the 50. That's how you have to look at them. Get them in the stadium. Let them be a part of the excitement. Now, I think one area that they can improve, regardless, and the social media part means very little to me. But that doesn't mean it means very little to other people. Above all, whether it's social media or not, and they have tried at Penn State, take my word, they've put up a new cell tower behind Medler Field, Lebrano Park, which is just across the street. They put cell towers on top of the press box, so forth. You somehow have to have better service in the stadium. That way you can call, that way you can text, or if you want to get on the internet and use social media, you can. No matter what, I think it's a big part of the experience is the ability to at least use your phone in some capacity. Even if it means, hey, look, I'm really into college football. Boom, boom, boom. I want to go on my phone. Bang, 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 bang. Okay, what is the score? The Ohio State-Indiana game. Oh, okay. I'm going to keep up on games that way. And that, you know, to me, I don't know. I'd like to find out from you, the fans, because I will be honest with you. I do not even look at my cell phone during the game. My cell phone does not come out of my briefcase until literally I'm off the air. There's not going to be a single thing in that cell phone that is going to help me in the broadcast except distract me. So, and again, I'm working, so that's a different thing as opposed to a social situation like you're in. All right? So since you're in that situation, you tell me, is the phone service in the stadium good enough for what you want to do? And if it's not, would improving it enhance your experience in the stadium? All right, tomorrow, Brandon Gauton from BleedingGreenNation.com joins us. Jeff Hartman from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. And much more. Kevin returns tomorrow. We still hope you'll listen. Stop laughing, Sarah.
Can't help it. It's fun spending Monday, though.
It was fun spending Monday with you and our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury.